Our first guest is Carl J. Evans, Director of Programs for Hope of the Day, the Chicago-based suicide prevention agency that operates... Yeah, I'm real interested in this, Operate Sip of Hope. We heard about this from our friends at Archie's and stuff. The world's first coffee shop where 100% of the proceeds support suicide prevention and mental health. Thanks for coming down, Carl.
Good evening. Thanks for having me down.
You rode your bike here.
Yeah, a little bit.
One of the first guests, I think, to ride the bike to the show, to the Allstate Skyline studio. So I'm real interested in this. So tell us a little bit about Hope of the Day and maybe how you got involved, and then I want to go back to the roots of the organization.
Absolutely. So Hope of the Day was founded in 2011 by Johnny Boucher, and it was inspired by his mentor in the music industry, Mike Scanlon. Johnny had been involved as a music promoter, band manager, and things like that when his boss and mentor, Mike, completed suicide in 2010. And Johnny felt compelled to basically do anything to speak out, reach out, and spread this message. And that's where we started with outreach. And I joined Hope of the Day. Together, Johnny and I built out both outreach and education platforms and things to go into community spaces to do proactive suicide prevention. Start this conversation before mental health adversely impacts our lives.
When you say outreach, what does that entail?
So in the very beginning, outreach was our sort of first prong that was going out. Specifically, John would go and speak on stage before bands would play. We'd be in music venues in Chicago, our earliest iteration, handing out resources with the lifelines and things like that. It's continued to grow where we do things like the Vans Warped Tour, partner with other bands and creatives.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Give me an example of how you work with Vans Warped.
So right now, we're on the tour from start to finish. We hit all the dates that Vans Warped Tour has, and we, of course, have a tent on site where we distribute resources and provide information to connect people with support if they're looking for it. But Johnny actually gets up on stage before a number of our partnering bands every single day and speaks from stage, letting people know it's okay not to be okay, and directing them where they can go and get resources at our tent. So it's more than just sort of, you know, slinging merch. It's sort of a check-in place where people can connect with resources.
Driving around the neighborhood, I know you, we'll get to the coffee shop in a little bit, but I know you hook up with Dark Matter. So over there in Ukrainian Village, I was driving around the other day and I saw you were involved in a little festival. I learned about you through the Archie's thing. So you go in, you seem to have a presence in the music community. Why is that important?
Well, so this was, you know, this was the core roots of Hope of the Day, started in the music industry from Johnny Boucher's passions. He'd been involved in music ever since he was 13 years old, booking punk and hardcore shows at the Mount Prospect Nights at Columbus Hall. And ever since then, he's, you know, continued to grow and progress. So when we first started, it started in the local venues of Chicago, like Reggie's and Cobra Lounge and places like that. And the reason that we've grown into other community spaces, places of business, schools, churches, libraries, is because the more and more John would speak and more we would do our work in the venues, people would come to us and say, hey, I want to bring this, you know, to my family. I want to bring this to my school. I want to bring this to my place of business. So music has always been our core, you know, the core home ground for us, but we've grown through that as the message goes out into other communities.
How did it grow in the clubs? I mean, did it first, I'm just imagining this, I don't know, I mean, did you first maybe put leaflets up and then posters? And
oh,
then
yeah, no, it started, it started very...
How organic was it?
Oh, no, yeah. This was straight up DIY.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny kind of hatched this plan in his kitchen nook of his Avondale apartment, and it was kind of like, can he do anything? What can we do? You know, he's not a clinician. He's not, you know, what can we do? Well, people don't even know where to go. In the same way that if you break your leg, you call 911. When people have mental health challenges, people don't even know where to go. So that started with starting in the community spaces Johnny knew. And it really was, you know, taking, nicking printing paper and from libraries and schools. John's a Columbia grad. And just printing out the national lifeline, starting real basic. And then it started to get a little more sophisticated as we found more localized resources and things like that. But yeah, it was straight up leaflets and really just John speaking, anyone, whether it's before a band set or before a whole show would go on, and really just breaking that silence, because the biggest obstacle to effective prevention is actually, you know, it's not services, it's not prescriptions, it's a silence based in stigma.
Yeah, I want to get to that. How did you get involved? How old are you?
So I am 33, and I was a high school peer of John's. We knew each other. We went to Adley Stevenson High School in Lincolnshire, huge high school. So we kind of knew each other from the same circles. And what happened is I had always had a peer and volunteer level support and participation in social services and things like that. And as John was going along, when he started the this nonprofit, the relationship, you know, Facebook or whatever, we were sort of in everyone's nexus. He basically hit me up and was like, "Hey, man, how do you write a grant?" So that's kind of where it started. And our forces sort of aligned where John had this clear visionary, you know, sense of moving really fast and having an aggression. And I had all this background and sort of some hands-on work we could be doing. And so the outreach and the education sort of just like melded into sort of one big super force.
Had you personally, like he had you been, this come into your circle, mental health and suicide and stuff?
Yes, I think that's one of the other strengths for us is that John didn't actually know this when he reached out to me asking if I could help to volunteer. But so if John has been a peer supporter and a survivor through he's lost friends and family, I had been a suicide survivor myself. I had attempted when I was 12 and again when
you
I was
did.
13. Yes. It was built in early childhood abuses and things that sort of, left unchecked and let built up. And, you know, you put on a game face and you hide your pain and a lot of boys don't cry kind of stuff.
Right.
And it sort of built up into these, thing where we like to talk about a soda bottle where the bottle shakes up and builds full of pressure. And if you don't figure out ways to let it out slowly and create valves, it can overwhelm you and explode. And for me,
well put, yeah.
As a teen, really, it did overwhelm me, and it wasn't a smooth road. You know, it didn't just end there. What happened is I began to self-medicate, get into alcohol and marijuana and other drugs, and I found other outlets to self-medicate. In my case, there was a lot of anger and aggression built up from it. You know, I had football and wrestling and other sports where it was okay for, you know, boys to let out
your
aggression.
You played football?
I played high school football
at Stevenson,
and did a little bit of wrestling a couple of years, and those were easy outlets aside from the partying to sort of cope. And it was a pretty rough and tumble journey, and why one of the reasons I was always involved in social type work, even as just arm's length volunteering, was because of my past experiences. I wanted to try and help others who are in pain. So
wow, I didn't have that on my. I didn't know that about you. I have friends that, but that was older when it happened to my circle. It was 16, 17, 18. What's it like for a 12-year-old to go through what you went through? Now, that, I mean, first person, you're here. I mean, what was that like? And who did you turn to?
Well, as I said before, yeah. I kept it all to myself.
Yeah,
my strategy, I did not start to talk about and open up about my attempts and near completions until I was about 22, 23, well out of high school. And my experience, it's own unique path, but my experience shares a lot of the same features in that felt alone, didn't know where to turn to, and even if there were people who, Lord knows, cared about me and loved me and were affectionate and would want to help in any sort of malady I'm going through, when you experience mental health pain, I go back to this thing about stigma. Social and cultural factors that try to dictate how we express ourselves. It's so intensive that you have this terror of looking weak, of being shameful, of being embarrassed, feeling silly, feeling like it's not that important because we don't educate ourselves on how mental health works. So for me, and something you see very common for people with lived experience, is that the ones who love you the most, the ones you love the most, you tend to put up the biggest barrier and the biggest masks around. So for me, it was kind of, you met me at school and it was a happy face and you'd have these like intensive emotional outbursts, but people would just say, you know, he was an angry kid or a rambunctious kid. But otherwise, I would, you know, just pretend like it was a happy-go-lucky thing and then cry to myself at night and be alone and, you know, and my only solace was really sort of music or movies or things that I could do by myself to just sort of like keep the anger and the sort of the really self-destructive and the sort of negative thoughts and whatnot silent.
What happens when Archie's and Katrina was on, it was right on the heels of the Anthony Bourdain thing. What happens when something like that comes into the public eye, when there's celebrity suicides and stuff? What happens with your organization?
Well, you see, that's the thing. You know, in America, there's roughly about 45,000 suicide completions per year, according to the CDC. And That's more than 121 suicide completions each day. And that includes active duty and military veterans. That includes teenagers and youth, where it's the, for 15 to 24 year olds, it's the second leading cause of death. It surpasses vehicular fatalities. And so it's, this is consistently happening, and yet it's silent until highly visible people complete. And then it becomes this gate opener. And that, I really come back to this because we're not going to really be able to make a tangible impact on suicide and reduce rates until we understand that silence and these factors of stigma that try to control keeping ourselves silent about symptoms, keeping ourselves silent about where to reach out for help, keeping ourselves silent about recognizing that the things that we're experiencing, just because it doesn't have a visible bruise or contusion, it's okay not to be okay. And so when a celebrity completes, it's terrible, as any suicide completion is. The flip side of that is that it becomes an unfortunate gate opener, in which it puts you right in the face and it triggers individuals to start talking about it. Because, you know, statistically, we all know someone, or we ourselves have experienced a mental health challenge. And so when you have this celebrity completion, it sort of gives people a vehicle to start talking about it without feeling judged or without feeling like they're going to be singled out. That's the base reality.
Wow. We got to take a break here, but I want to right now and then later tell people how they can get in touch with you. This is like, you know, I'm a print guy, I'm not really a radio guy, but this is the type of reason I wanted to get into radio, to share these subjects and let people know about this. So how can people connect with your group?
Okay, so our mission is to do outreach and education, and we want to activate individuals to go out and press this conversation and raise the visibility of resources. The way you do that is you can connect with Hope for the Day on our website, hftd.org, henryfrankthomasdavis.org.
Very good.
And if you look at the tab Get Involved, you can see sort of we have very entry-level descriptions of a whole number of ways that you can get involved with us as an individual or as a community space, whether you're a business or a church or a school. So we have our Ages of Impact program, where we want to progressively teach you how to go out there and raise the visibility of resources, and even eventually become an advocate, so that the way to make an impact and reduce suicide rates is it's that grassroots vision.
Okay. All right, this is fascinating. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Sip of Hope coffee bar after this on WGN's Nocturnal Journal.
Because nothing's ever over till you say it's over, and nothing's ever finished, not unless you walk away. You see, I got hope, so we can use a little, even when you don't, and I won't let go. 'Cause a little bit of it can go a long, long way.
Oh. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're at the Allstate Skyline Studio. You like the view up here, Carl?
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's
really, with Carl J. Evans, Director of Programs of Hope of the Day, the Chicago-based suicide prevention and mental health agency that also operates Sip of Hope. This is fascinating. Tell us about the Sip of Hope coffee bar, which I understand is the world's first coffee shop, where 100% of proceeds support proactive suicide prevention and mental health. And it is at 3039 West Fullerton?
That is correct.
Okay, this is equally fascinating.
Oh, man. So we're so thrilled. Sip of Hope is a social enterprise, and it's an LLC owned by Hope for the Day as a way to do a few things. One, it helps create sustainability for the charity, for the nonprofit, to continue our work as we grow. Number two, it's a fulfillment of the proactive suicide prevention vision that we've crafted, that Johnny helped engineer, and that the whole Hope for the Day team builds and works on now. And what that means is that when we do our work, the point is to empower individuals and other people to bring awareness and education into their spaces, to make sure that this is a conversation we're not just having during September Suicide Prevention Month or Mental Health Awareness Month, but it's year-round, just like taking care of your physical health, because the brain is part of your body. Well, one of the ways we do that, and I mentioned this in the earlier segment, is we have programs where community spaces can be partners with us. We call Partners in Prevention. Dark Matter Coffee is our basically our first partner in prevention. They bring resources into their space, put out our resource cards and wristbands and buttons in all their shops. They provide our education training to their staff to better empower their staff. And it helps create an environment that normalizes and destigmatizes mental health. Well, so two great forces working together. We have this proactive vision. We wanted sustainability. Dark Matter, we have a bag of beans called Sip of Hope with Dark Matter that was sold in Whole Foods and in their stores already. And so this vision of starting up an actual dedicated shop that Hope for the Day would run and serve Dark Matter coffee was really, it just made sense in a lot of ways because it practices the proactive vision where you come in, you have a cup of coffee, and it's about that conversation. It's about the connection where you're surrounded in an environment where it normalizes mental health. It's there in the writing. We have beautiful art that talks about this. Matt Hoffman and Lauren Ask the pieces. And so you're there and you can't escape it. And we want you to feel comfortable having conversations about mental health. But more importantly, you come in and have that conversation and that coffee and that relationship. But you also take it with you and you walk out of the store and bring those wristbands and that cup of coffee and that experience with you back into your community spaces, your place of business, school, work, family. And so that's what Sip of Hope is. It's just a sort of a living, breathing fulfillment of the idea of it's okay not to be okay and understanding that mental health is something that we can be proactive on and take care of.
And it's when did it open?
We opened May 3rd.
Of this year?
That's correct. Really? May 3rd, 2018. It was fantastic.
New? Yeah.
We have a great video that we send out online of the opening day. We had Senator Dick Durbin, among other Chicago politicians, come out, as well as community members from all over the greater Logan Square and Chicago mental health community. And it was just it was wonderful. It was a great experience.
It's open 7 days a week, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m.?
That is correct.
For those of us who like coffee, like at 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Oh, serving it hot, serving it iced, either which way you like it. And we just last week got our patio up and running. So by this time next week, or pardon me, as we start the new week, the patio will be in full swing operation, we hope.
Well, I got so much. I got two more quick things here. I got off track. The reason I asked you your age, mm-hmm. How old are you again?
Just 33.
33. And you went through your first challenge at age 12. Mm-hmm. The reason I asked the age is this increase in, again, the people you talk to, the people you do outreach with, is the problem getting worse? Is the problem the same? Where does it stand as far as where things are right now?
That's a tricky question. So an official statement based on statistics collected by the Center for Disease Control, CDC, would be that we're in a 30-year surge, okay, a 30-year spike in suicide completion rates. And that's absolutely true when you look at suicide completion rates from about the late 90s trending this way. It's back on an upward trend with the fastest growing demographic being adolescents, and inside of adolescents, 10 to 13, females being the highest group inside of that. The reason I say it's tricky is because of stigma. So, you know, we're talking about a situation in which suicide and mental health in general was just something we didn't talk about, right? Mm-hmm. And with that, we don't know how accurate statistics were 30 years and 60 years ago. But that's kind of besides the point. Let's focus on right now. We know we're over 121 completions per day right now. That should be a benchmark enough. And we know that, well, it's the second leading cause of death for teens. We also know that it dramatically impacts men and women of all ages. It dramatically impacts demographics. If you're LGBTQ, you know, you're four times as likely to attempt. All of these are circulating around unaddressed mental health challenges and facing mental health challenges in a social environment that is somewhat hostile to mental health. So that's the real reality, is that I think there's a heightened visibility happening, thankfully, and we can be turning this tide, but it's almost impossible to say whether it's getting better or worse.
Okay, we got about a minute left. Real quick, I want you to give the website again, how people can get in touch, and real quick, talk about Talk Saves Lives. That's open to the public. That's August 18th.
Absolutely.
Make it fast.
Yeah. Okay, so best way to get in touch with us is hftd.org. That's henryfrankthomasdavid.org. And we host a monthly education session that's an entry level into proactive prevention called Talk Saves Lives at the Logan Square Public Library. go on our website to figure out the event times and get a free RSVP ticket.
12:30 to 2 on August 18th.
Is the next event.
So you got to come back.
Absolutely.
Will you come back?
Oh, we'd love to.
I'd like to stay on this story.
Oh, it'd be our pleasure.
Are going with you guys. You're great. Okay, thanks for coming down. Thanks for riding the bike to the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're back with more after David Jennings and the news on WGN.